Hello, I'm Ben. Before I hand it over to Trinity and Steve, let me set the stage for Fire in One Man's Bones. No vote, no committee, just God's voice. God doesn't need a crowd to change history. Again and again, Scripture shows us He uses just one person, burning with His fire, to shift nations. That's the one man calling, chosen, empowered, sent by Him alone. Think of Moses at the burning bush, Exodus 3, 4, verse 10. No counsel, no vote, no approval from men. God Himself chose him, equipped him, and sent him. That's a divine commission, not subject to ballots, not swayed by applause, standing only on the authority of I am that I am. And Jesus said, "You did not choose me, but I chose you." John 15, 16. True calling doesn't come from titles or ceremonies. It begins in heaven. It flows from God's voice. Throughout the Bible, God raised individuals who shaped nations and the life of the church. And He's still doing it today. Right now, in our generation, He calls men and women to step into moments that change history. As our CEO, David, reminds us, the burning bush is still alive. Maybe not in flames. But the principle is the same. God still calls, God still speaks, and His voice still sets people apart. And hear this, the one man calling is still alive today, ready for someone to step up, ready for someone to move, ready for someone to change history, before He returns. So I ask you, who will step up? Who will move? Who will let the fire burn in their bones? Who will answer the call of God? With that, I will turn it over to our hosts. And remember, we don't say goodbye. We say, until the trumpet blows. In the meantime, let's keep pushing forward until He comes. God bless you.
Thank you, Ben, for that excellent introduction. Your voice is honestly so easy to listen to, and we're thrilled you're a part of the digital team here at CAJL Outreach.
Absolutely, Ben. Always a pleasure. And welcome, everyone, to The Growth Journey, a deep dive podcast. I'm Trinity.
And I'm Steve. You just heard Ben in the opening. As part of the CAJL Outreach digital community team, we are absolutely thrilled to share the incredible work being done here.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing outstanding results every single day. And it's a true testament to the heart and vision behind our organization.
It really is. And today we're taking a dedicated deep dive into the compelling memoir of our CEO and founder, Chaplain David.
Right. This memoir, it offers such profound insights, doesn't it, into his unique journey and the spiritual foundations of his work.
It really does. And you can just feel it throughout the memoir. He possesses a tremendous heart for people. Especially, you know, for children whose lives are impacted by having loved ones within the jail system.
Yeah, that comes through so strongly.
It's a perspective, you know, forged in experience and just driven by this deep conviction.
That's right. Chaplain David, our founder, he truly embodies the calling described in his memoir. His life, as he presents it in his own words, it reflects so much time spent in contemplation and prayer.
You can tell.
And this spiritual depth, it just shines through in everything the memoir discusses. It's an honor, really, to explore his thoughtful reflections and wisdom with you today, drawing directly from his experiences and insights captured right there in his memoir.
So let's unpack this incredible memoir, starting with a title that truly captures its essence. A Fire in Your Bones. No vote, no committee, just God's voice.
Wow.
What a powerful and honestly provocative way to begin. It immediately invites us to consider a path less traveled, doesn't it? A divine assignment that, as the memoir argues, completely bypasses typical human systems of approval and consensus.
That title alone, A Fire in Your Bones, it just signals something extraordinary straight away. It speaks to a deep internal compulsion, you know, an unshakable conviction that drives an individual forward. It really makes you pause and think. What kind of internal fire, what kind of divine calling could possibly override all the established human processes we usually rely on, you know, for validation and direction?
Exactly.
The memoir lays out such a compelling argument that these kinds of callings are not only real, but profoundly impactful.
Absolutely. And that's precisely what we're here to explore in this Growth Journey, a Deep Dive podcast. We're going to delve into the foundational principles behind such a profound calling, the unique character traits often forged by it,
right,
and how these divinely initiated assignments manifest and leave their mark in our modern world, all as articulated through Chaplain David's own experiences and observations in his memoir.
All right, let's start then. Let's introduce the man behind the memoir, David Averitt himself. The section, Meet David, the memoirist. It presents a life that truly exemplifies resilience, a deep faith, and, well, hard-earned wisdom.
Definitely hard-earned.
Yeah. His approach to life, leadership, belief, it's encapsulated in what he calls his solid wisdom. And this isn't just a catchy phrase, you know, as the memoir illustrates. It's a distillation of decades of living, learning, leading through incredibly diverse and often really challenging circumstances.
Yeah.
This isn't theoretical knowledge we're talking about. It's wisdom that's been tested, refined, and proven in the crucible of real-world experience.
Yeah.
Which makes it so profoundly applicable.
And what's particularly illuminating in the memoir is just the sheer breadth of Mr. Averitt's background that underpins this solid wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
The memoir details his extensive experience, 22 years of dedicated service as a combat veteran. And it's important to clarify, as the memoir does,
right,
during that time, he served as a military leader, not a military chaplain.
That's a key distinction.
It really is. It highlights his experience in direct command, strategic planning.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond his military service, his foundation also comes from a strong academic grounding from Bible College. So he has this deep understanding of spiritual truths and scriptural principles. And then on a personal level, the memoir shares his journey through over 30 years of marriage, facing both incredible triumphs and, you know, as often happens in life, profound losses that inevitably shape a person so deeply.
Of course.
Today, the memoir reflects his current happiness, being remarried, a devoted father, and of course, the CEO and founder of CA Jail Outreach Nationwide. This rich tapestry of experiences, military leadership, personal journey, spiritual education, it provides just an unparalleled perspective on divine calling.
And reading the memoir, you can truly see how he applies these hard-earned lessons in, well, every facet of his work, in leadership, in faith, in strategy.
Yeah.
His memoir isn't just a recounting of events. It serves as a living testament to how those experiences have forged him into the leader he is today.
Exactly.
The memoir really elaborates on his unique talent for guiding individuals towards hope, helping them find second chances, and ultimately building better lives. This is just about learned concepts from textbooks. This is practical wisdom, gained from rigorous military leadership training, participation in an advanced strategist program, and crucially, all profoundly shaped by his own 53-year journey of service, education, and dedicated Bible training. It's a holistic approach to life that really sets the stage for understanding the depth and conviction behind his calling. He really knows what he's talking about.
That holistic approach and that deeply personal journey, they lead us perfectly into the core concept of the memoir itself, captured by its powerful title, A Fire in Your Bones, No Vote, No Committee, Just God's Voice.
Such a strong title.
Isn't it? Yeah. This central theme immediately confronts us with the feeling the memoir describes as a holy discontent. It's that deep, often unarticulated whisper within, you know, a persistent inner knowing that the status quo just isn't enough.
Right.
That there's something more you're meant to do, something bigger than your current circumstances. The memoir portrays this as a fire that demands attention, a divine restlessness that cannot be ignored or simply wished away. It's a sense of purpose so strong, it just burns within.
And the memoir immediately brings up this powerful contrast, doesn't it? It challenges our sort of ingrained belief that significant change or meaningful action always requires a crowd or committees or popular opinion.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a world that is so heavily structured by consensus, by votes, by formal approvals.
Mm-hmm.
We're taught to seek endorsement, right? To get a committee's buy-in or wait for public affirmation before taking a big step, especially in matters of significant impact.
Yeah, that's the standard path.
But the memoir posits this counter-narrative, suggesting that history's most crucial turning points often completely bypass popular opinion. They don't wait for a show of hands or a formal resolution. This challenges a really fundamental assumption many of us hold about leadership and initiation.
Precisely. And this is where the memoir powerfully defines what it calls the one-man calling. It's described as a divine assignment ignited directly by God's voice, requiring no human approval, no vote, no committee. It's a call that is immediate and authoritative, because its origin is divine, not human. The memoir connects this directly to ancient paths, drawing parallels to figures like Moses, Jeremiah, and Paul.
Okay, the big ones.
Right. These were not individuals who applied for their roles, nor were they elected by popular vote or appointed by some council. As the memoir emphasizes, they were chosen, equipped, and sent by God directly.
Mm-hmm.
And what's particularly fascinating is that this isn't presented as merely a historical concept. The memoir forcefully emphasizes that it's a path still being walked and experienced today, demonstrating its enduring relevance.
I found a particular quote from Chaplain David in the memoir incredibly insightful on this point. It really sets the stage for the entire discussion. He states, and I quote, "History rarely turns on the decision of a committee. It pivots on the conviction of a single, yielded heart."
That's a powerful statement.
Isn't it? This statement from the memoir, it's profound because it just strips away all the layers of human bureaucracy and collective decision-making. Instead, it points directly to the transformative power of one individual's unwavering conviction and obedience.
Yeah.
It highlights that the most impactful shifts often emerge from a place of deep personal submission to a divine directive, rather than a negotiated compromise or a popular consensus. It challenges us to look beyond the visible mechanisms of change and consider the unseen yet powerful force of conviction. That's an excellent quote from the boss. He's very wise.
It really does put the onus squarely on individual responsiveness, doesn't it? This idea presented in the memoir that one person's surrendered heart can be the pivotal point for something massive. It fundamentally reorients our understanding of change.
Absolutely.
And for you, our listener, this should spark some personal reflection, as the memoir itself encourages. Have you ever felt such a fire or an inner conviction? A strong, persistent pull towards something that felt bigger than you, something that didn't necessarily make logical sense to others, but resonated deeply within your spirit.
Yeah, that little nudge, or maybe not so little.
Right. Perhaps a quiet but persistent urging to step out, to speak up, or to initiate something that you felt was divinely placed on your heart, even if it meant going against the prevailing current or institutional expectations. That, according to the memoir, is the essence of this holy discontent.
Okay, so moving into the next section titled Marked by Heaven, The Life of God's One Man, the memoir delves into a really interesting paradox, doesn't it, concerning those chosen by God?
It does.
It asks, why do individuals who receive such a direct calling often seem to face the deepest struggles, the most profound adversities? And the answer, which might surprise many, isn't presented as punishment at all.
No, quite the opposite.
Instead, the memoir frames these struggles as preparation. It posits that these challenges aren't setbacks, but rather the very crucible in which God molds, refines, and strengthens individuals for the unique and weighty purpose he has for them.
It's a powerful reframing of adversity, isn't it? Not as a hindrance, but as a necessary and intentional part of the divine journey, building a resilience essential for such a calling.
Exactly.
This is a truly crucial insight articulated in the memoir. It explains how God pulls you out, sets you apart, and marks you with his fire. This isn't just poetic language.
No.
It's a visual of divine selection that implies a deliberate process of differentiation, one that isn't about comfort or ease. Instead, to be chosen in this context means to carry a weight, a burden, and a vision that few others will ever truly know or understand.
That sounds heavy.
It signifies a profound departure from the ordinary, a life that is distinct because it is consecrated for an extraordinary purpose. This kind of setting apart, the memoir suggests, isn't for personal glorification, but for a unique mission that requires a different kind of strength, a different perspective, and an unwavering commitment that can only come from a direct divine mandate.
And this separation, as the memoir points out with really striking honesty, often feels like loneliness, isolation, or even outright rejection from those around you.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine how profoundly difficult that would be to experience. But here's the profound truth that the memoir highlights to offer perspective and comfort. You were never called to belong where God has called you to lead.
That's another really insightful quote from Chaplain David.
It is. It's such a powerful statement for anyone who has ever felt out of place, misunderstood, or alienated on their journey, particularly when pursuing a path that seems to deviate from conventional expectations.
Yeah.
It reframes that feeling of alienation not as a personal flaw or a sign of failure, but rather as a confirmation of their unique path. It's a poignant reminder that their leadership or unique mission isn't meant to be validated by the very environment or system they are called to impact or change.
The memoir really brings this internal reality to life by discussing what it terms the burden of vision that comes with such a calling.
The burden of vision.
Yeah. When you're marked by heaven, the memoir suggests you begin to see what others cannot. You hear what others ignore or dismiss. There's a fire that burns inside you, a conviction that the crowd simply cannot comprehend because they haven't been given the same revelation or the same burden.
So you try to explain it, but...
Exactly. You might try, but it often sounds foreign or even fanatical to those around you. And this often leads to a unique kind of pain. The calling not only separates you from the world at large, but it may even distance you, sometimes profoundly, from those you love most, simply because they don't share the same divine perspective. Yet, in that very pain of separation, in that feeling of being distinct and set apart, the memoir argues, lies the undeniable proof that you are indeed marked by heaven, bearing a unique imprint from God.
And this leads us right to the absolute core of the matter, doesn't it? As articulated in the memoir, the source of the calling, God alone.
Undeniably.
The memoir makes it unequivocally clear that a true calling, this profound one-man calling, originates solely in heaven, not in any human system or electoral process. It directly quotes scripture, reinforcing this divine origin and asserting God's absolute sovereignty. You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you.
That's John 15, verse 16.
Right, John 15, 16. And that statement, it immediately strips away any notion that human votes, titles, ceremonies, or popular opinion can somehow create or legitimize a true calling from God. It's a direct declaration of divine initiative, where the choice is God's alone.
What's fascinating here, as the memoir elaborates, is that this concept of a divine appointment isn't an anomaly. It's a recurring theme for key figures throughout the Bible, central to many pivotal moments in spiritual history.
Right.
It's presented as a direct commission from God that is simply not subject to human approval or electoral processes. The memoir explicitly states that this calling is not the result of ballots cast by men or the applause of crowds, but rather the burden of God placed on a chosen vessel. This chosen individual is called, equipped, and sent by the Lord himself, operating entirely outside the realm of human elections or endorsements. It underscores a divine sovereignty that is both absolute and entirely self-sufficient.
The memoir provides some really powerful biblical examples to illustrate this point, driving home that this isn't some new concept, but a timeless method of divine operation.
Right, the foundations.
Exactly. First, we have Moses, called directly by God at the burning bush, as recounted in Exodus chapter 3. There was no council meeting, no congregational vote.
No application form.
Definitely not. No approval from men required. God chose him, equipped him with his power, and sent him with a direct mandate. Then there's Jeremiah.
Mm-hmm.
The memoir reminds us he was called even before his birth, as we see in Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5. His entire ministry began purely by divine initiative. Again, not by man's vote or sanction.
Amazing.
And finally, the memoir highlights Paul, originally Saul of Tarsus. His calling came through that direct, personal encounter with Christ on the road to Damascus, detailed in Acts chapter 9. He wasn't chosen by the existing apostles or any ecclesiastical committee. Jesus appeared to him personally and set him apart for his unique mission. These examples are just foundational to understanding the essence of the one-man calling as presented in the memoir.
Building on that concept of direct divine initiative, the memoir then dives into the divine authority, I am that I am.
Oh.
This is such a profound revelation of God's nature. When God called Moses at the burning bush, he didn't just give him a task. He revealed his eternal, self-existent nature through his very name. This name, I am that I am, as found in Exodus chapter 3, verse 14.
Exodus 3, 14.
Right. It's the ultimate source of all authority, requiring no human validation whatsoever.
Hmm.
It signifies God's complete and utter self-sufficiency, his timelessness, his absolute power, a name that just stands alone.
And I think it's important to really hear that scripture accurately, emphasizing its profound implications. It reads, God said unto Moses, I am that I am. Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you.
Mm-hmm.
The emphasis on I am is absolutely crucial because, as the memoir explains, it speaks to a self-originating inherent power. It's an authority that doesn't derive from anything else, from no higher power, no human institution. It simply is.
Exactly. This divine name, I am, appears consistently throughout Scripture, always asserting a sovereignty that stands entirely above any earthly institution or human construct. As the memoir powerfully articulates, the authority of a one-man calling isn't rooted in human systems, nor is it validated by popular vote or societal consensus.
Not at all.
Instead, it is anchored directly in the unchanging, eternal nature of God himself, the great I am. This means the legitimacy of such a calling is inherent in its divine origin, making human endorsement utterly secondary, if not irrelevant, to its power and purpose. The memoir's emphasis on this foundational truth provides such a robust understanding of the source of truly world-changing initiatives.
Okay, so if this kind of direct divine calling isn't just a relic of ancient history, you know, a story confined to biblical narratives, how does a one-man calling actually work today?
That's the key question, isn't it?
Yeah. The memoir makes it abundantly clear. God doesn't need a council meeting or a committee's vote or an application process. He simply needs a yielded vessel.
That's the core requirement.
It emphasizes that the same spirit who called Moses from the burning bush is still calling men and women today, often in powerful, undeniable ways. The memoir beautifully puts it. The burning bush of today is now a burning heart.
I like that phrasing.
Me too. While God may not use visible supernatural signs as frequently as in biblical times, the memoir asserts that he primarily uses his spirit, his word, and real-life confirmations.
Oh.
But the authority behind the call is exactly the same and still requires no human approval or validation. It's an internal, divine mandate.
What's fascinating here, as the memoir details, are the modern mechanisms God uses to initiate and confirm such callings. First, the memoir describes how God calls through his spirit. This manifests as an inner voice, a profound spiritual prompting, or what the memoir terms a holy burden placed directly in the heart.
A holy burden.
Yeah. This burden, once felt, simply cannot be ignored or voted away. It's an internal compulsion, a deep sense of responsibility for a specific mission or people. Second, the memoir explains that God often speaks through his word. A particular scripture can suddenly leap off the page, as the memoir describes it, providing a direct mandate or a clear confirmation that transcends any committee's opinion, speaking with pinpoint accuracy to an individual situation.
Wow, like it was written just for you in that moment.
Exactly. Third, God confirms through circumstances. Doors open that no man can shut. Opportunities align in unexpected ways, bypassing traditional gatekeepers, human barriers, even logical human pathways, clearing paths that would otherwise seem impassable.
Amazing when that happens.
And finally, the memoir highlights that God confirms through the undeniable presence of fruit, and often, paradoxically, through opposition.
Opposition? That's interesting.
Yeah, a person operating under such a calling often sees results that visibly outpace human ability or resources, proving a divine endorsement that no vote could ever grant. And this work is often accompanied by resistance or criticism, which further confirms the unique, against-the-grain nature of the path.
These contemporary examples really help to bring the abstract concept of a one-man calling home and root it in our current reality. The memoir discusses examples like a preacher igniting a powerful revival where the spiritual atmosphere is tangibly transformed, or a missionary breaking completely new ground in a foreign land, establishing a presence where none existed before. These are often individuals, the memoir explains, who don't apply for a ministry position through a conventional structured process or wait for an election within a denomination to begin their work.
Right, they just go.
They just obey a divine assignment given directly to them, stepping out in faith because of that undeniable fire in their bones. It's an act of profound personal conviction and obedience, not institutional approval or bureaucratic permission.
It's crucial, however, to clarify an important distinction here, as the memoir meticulously does, between what it refers to as a normal ministry calling, which is often affirmed by a church body or established denomination, and the one-man calling, which explicitly requires no such vote, counsel, or human approval for its initiation.
Okay, that's a key difference.
It is. A standard ministry calling, while certainly originating from God, is often deeply rooted in Scripture regarding the gifting described, for instance, in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11.
Ephesians 4:11.
Right, yeah. Which speaks of apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. While the call itself originates from God, the process typically involves public affirmation by church leaders through ordination, commissioning, or the laying on of hands.
Right. There's a structure.
Exactly. In stark contrast, a one-man calling, as we've seen with biblical figures like Moses and Jeremiah, comes directly from God through a singular, intensely personal encounter, vision, or inner voice. The memoir underscores that there is no vote, no counsel, and no human appointment involved in its initiation. Its authority is presented as absolute from the very moment God speaks, independent of any human affirmation.
So it's valid from the get-go, from God's side.
Precisely. This is why the memoir emphasizes that a one-man calling is a rare, singular event rooted entirely in God's sovereign choice, not subject to election, popular vote, or human initiation.
That's a really important distinction, and the memoir lays it out so clearly with that comparison table it includes. It's worth walking through those points from the memoir in detail to really grasp the nuances.
Let's do that.
Okay, first, who calls? For a normal ministry calling, the memoir states it's God, often expressed through His Spirit, His Word, and affirmed by the church body. But for a one-man calling, it's God directly, through a singular encounter, a vivid vision, or a direct inner voice. There's a distinct immediacy there.
A very direct line.
Yeah. Next, the memoir addresses how confirmed. A normal calling often sees the church affirm, ordain, and lay hands on the individual, signifying their recognition of God's call. In the one-man calling, confirmation might follow through the fruit of the work, but the origin is God alone. It doesn't need human confirmation to be valid or to commence.
The validity isn't dependent on the confirmation.
Exactly. Then how many? The memoir points out that many individuals serve in normal ministry roles, pastors, teachers, evangelists, contributing to the ongoing life of the church. But a one-man calling is usually, as the name suggests, for one unique person with a particular, singular mission, often outside existing structures.
More focused, perhaps.
Seems so. The memoir then gives us examples. Timothy, in the Bible, was confirmed and ordained by elders for his ministry. Contrast that with Moses, Jeremiah, Paul, and John the Baptist, all presented as powerful examples of the one-man calling.
Clear contrast there.
Very clear. Then the fruit evidence also differs. A normal calling is focused on equipping the body of Christ for service and growth, building up the community. A one-man calling, however, is often about shifting history, ushering in a new move of God, creating something entirely novel and foundational.
Bigger scale, often.
Potentially, yeah. Finally, the public role. Normal ministry involves ongoing roles in church life, providing consistent leadership, teaching, and pastoral care. A one-man calling is often singular, prophetic, and destiny-shaping. A specific, time-sensitive mission that profoundly alters the course of events or initiates a new era of spiritual activity.
This comprehensive comparison in the memoir really helps to crystallize the distinct nature of the one-man calling. It's not intended to diminish other forms of ministry, which are absolutely vital for the daily life and health of the church.
Of course not.
But it firmly establishes that the one-man calling is a rare, singular event rooted entirely in God's sovereign choice and direct initiative. It's not something you apply for or get elected to or initiate yourself through human effort or ambition. The memoir presents it as a divine imposition, a sacred burden, and its authority comes solely from that unassailable divine origin, completely independent of human endorsement.
This brings us to another really important discussion point from the memoir, delving into one-man calling versus pastors, ministers, and missionaries. It's not about ranking or judging which is better, right? But understanding God's diverse purposes and methods.
Exactly. Function over hierarchy.
Right. The first point the memoir emphasizes is that God is the only source of authority. The memoir clearly states that the ultimate authority does not rest in human titles, councils, or votes. All true callings, whether it's a one-man calling or a pastoral office, come from God alone.
Mm-hmm.
And as the memoir argues, no human process can either create them or veto them. The authority is always borrowed from God, never self-generated or conferred by man alone. This establishes a universal principle for all legitimate spiritual leadership.
That's a critical foundational truth, as articulated by the memoir. The second point explores different callings, different purposes. The memoir describes the one-man calling as a sovereign, direct calling that is not put to a vote, and its purpose is often prophetic and generational, intended to ignite significant shifts or initiate entirely new movements. In contrast, pastors, teachers, and other ministry roles are described as gifts given to the church, as outlined in Ephesians chapter 4. While often affirmed by people through their recognition and support, their appointment is also from God, but their purpose is for ongoing spiritual growth, nurturing, and equipping the body of believers.
So, different functions.
Exactly. The memoir suggests both are equally valid in God's eyes, but they serve distinct, though complementary, functions within His broader plan.
And then the memoir tackles that intriguing question. Which has higher authority?
Yeah, that always comes up.
It does. But it wisely reframes this, saying the question is not about which is higher in some hierarchical sense, but rather how God has designed them to function, particularly outside of typical human systems of approval.
Right.
The memoir contends that the one-man calling often carries extraordinary authority, an authority that can and often does override human structures or conventional expectations.
Yeah.
Think about it. Moses was not voted in by the Israelites.
Definitely not.
Nor did man ordain Paul. Their authority came directly from God, bypassing human intermediaries and even challenging existing systems. Ongoing ministry offices, like those of pastors, also carry authority to equip and shepherd the flock, to teach and guide. Their legitimacy, too, comes from God, but it's often exercised within and affirmed by the congregation they serve.
So it's about the sphere and source of that authority in practice.
Precisely. The memoir highlights that it's about design function and divine intention, not a hierarchy of importance in God's eyes. This nuanced distinction, as presented in the memoir, prevents misinterpretations and helps us appreciate God's multifaceted approach to leadership. Our boss made a really good point there in the memoir.
Indeed. And this leads to the fourth point in the memoir, the biblical balance. The Bible, as the memoir illustrates, clearly shows that both types of callings are necessary, and crucially, both are initiated by God, not by popular vote or human committees.
Both are needed.
Right. The memoir uses a powerful analogy to illustrate this dynamic. A one-man calling begins with a fire that needs no one's permission to start, igniting a new movement or direction. But pastors and ministers, in their ongoing roles, build altars where that fire can be kept burning, nurtured, and sustained within the community of believers.
I like that analogy, the fire starter and the fire keeper.
Exactly. So while a one-man calling may be rare and unique in its inception, it is presented as a powerful reminder that God's call is not constrained by committees or human votes. It's described in the memoir as a compliment raised by God to prove that his voice cannot be contained and his spirit still calls directly without asking for human approval, often initiating something entirely new.
This concept of the one-man calling truly comes alive when we look at history through the lens of the memoir. It dives into one man's callings that shaped the church in America.
Yeah, this part is fascinating.
It really is.
Yeah.
It illustrates how God's transformative work in the U.S. doesn't primarily trace back to committees, boards, or democratic elections within religious institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, the memoir argues, it's fundamentally the story of individuals who heard God's call and said yes without waiting for human approval or consensus.
It's counterintuitive to how we often think things get done.
Totally. The memoir asserts that almost every significant ministry and spiritual movement in this nation can be traced back to a single person who burned with God's fire, acting independently of any popular vote or conventional endorsement.
It's a compelling argument, highlighting that divine initiative often sidesteps human processes and structures to accomplish its purposes. The memoir provides specific, powerful examples, starting with the early foundations from the 1600s to the 1800s.
Okay.
Think of figures like Jonathan Edwards, the theologian and revivalist, and George Whitefield, the itinerant evangelist. Their calls to preach came directly from God, not from a council or a denominational vote, as the memoir explains. It was their individual obedience and powerful proclamation that sparked the first Great Awakening, a profound spiritual revival that swept through the colonies and profoundly shaped the spiritual landscape of early America. These men were responding to a deeply personal, divine imperative.
And then moving into the revivalists and shapers of the 1800s, the memoir points to William Seymour, a deeply significant figure.
Hugely significant.
Yeah. This is a fascinating example because with no vote, no official title, and in the face of significant racial and social barriers of the time, God, as the memoir describes, used this one man at the Azusa Street Revival to ignite a global Pentecostal movement that continues to impact Christianity to this day.
Incredible impact from such humble beginnings.
Absolutely. His call was purely divine, his obedience singular in its conviction, and the fruit of his ministry, as detailed in the memoir, undeniably transformed spiritual history. He simply responded to God's voice, not man's.
Fast forward to the 20th century torchbearers in the 1900s, and the pattern continues to emerge with remarkable consistency, according to the memoir. Consider Billy Graham.
Of course.
A simple farm boy whose immense calling was not initiated by a committee vote or ecclesiastical appointment, but was instead confirmed by millions of souls impacted by his global evangelistic ministry.
The fruit was undeniable.
Undeniable. And then there are figures like Bill Bright, who founded Campus Crusade for Christ, Crew,
right.
And Bob Pierce, who founded World Vision. The memoir highlights that their monumental global ministries didn't begin because a board approved a strategic plan.
No.
They were born from broken hearts, a profound personal conviction from God, and an unwavering commitment to a divinely impressed vision. These were individuals who responded to a singular divine burden, not an organizational mandate or a popular vote.
What's consistent across all these examples, from Jonathan Edwards right through to modern figures the memoir mentions, is that recurring pattern. One person, often with one distinct vision, taking one decisive step of faith, all without needing a vote or widespread public approval to begin.
It really underscores the central idea of the memoir.
It does. That God doesn't require a platform, a popular vote, or an established institution to begin a movement that changes the world. What he truly needs is a yielded vessel, a heart that is ready to say yes to his direct call. That's what allows his fire to burn through one person and ignite something monumental and far-reaching.
This compelling historical overview brings us to modern-day examples of a one-man calling, showing that this isn't just a historical phenomenon relegated to past eras.
Right, it's still happening.
Absolutely. The memoir emphasizes that the fundamental foundation of this calling is that God consistently raises people not by popular vote or committee decision, but by profound personal obedience that doesn't require anyone's approval but his own. These contemporary stories serve as powerful proof that God doesn't need human permission to act or to initiate his purposes.
He just needs obedience.
He consistently works through individuals who are willing to step out in faith and respond to his direct call, even if it means moving against the current.
And we can see this very clearly exemplified in mission-driven organizations and entrepreneurship. The memoir proudly highlights organizations like CAJL Outreach.
Our own organization.
Exactly. And Prison Fellowship. These nonprofits, which are making such incredible differences in people's lives and communities, were not born from a people's vote or a pre-approved strategic plan put forth by a board.
No.
The memoir attributes their genesis to a one-man calling. In our case, it was the incredible vision and profound conviction of Chaplain David, our CEO and founder, that brought CAJL Outreach into being.
His personal fire.
Yes. His personal call and singular obedience led to the establishment of this organization, which, as the memoir's narrative suggests, and as we see every single day, is now achieving outstanding results and transforming countless lives. It's a powerful, tangible testament to what one person yielded to God's voice can accomplish.
It really is.
The memoir also mentions kingdom-minded entrepreneurs, individuals who start businesses specifically to fund ministry or advance kingdom purposes, driven by a deeply personal call, not some corporate charter approved by others.
Absolutely. It's a testament to how these divine seeds, planted in a single yielded heart, can grow into mighty trees bearing much fruit. The memoir also points to examples within church and spiritual works that illustrate this modern manifestation.
Like who?
Well, think of Francis Chan, who famously left his megachurch based on a deeply personal conviction he felt from God. Not a congregational vote or the advice of a denominational board.
Right. That was a big move.
A huge move. His move, as discussed in the memoir, was a direct response to what he felt God was specifically telling him to do, even if it defied convention. Similarly, the memoir cites pastors like Michael Todd and Chris Hodges, who chose to plant churches in specific cities based on God's direction. Their authority to do so came directly from their obedience to that call, not from ballots cast by a congregation. These are living examples that demonstrate the enduring relevance and transformative power of a one-man calling in our very own time, showing that God is still speaking and still calling individuals to unique missions.
Okay, so while the one-man calling originates purely with God and needs no human vote for its validation or initiation, the memoir acknowledges that this profound calling isn't lived out in a vacuum, right?
Not at all. That's crucial.
In the section Navigating the Call, Humility, Community, and Confirmation, the memoir thoughtfully discusses that this unique divine assignment, though direct, is lived out in a world with other people.
Mm-hmm.
It truly highlights that a divine calling, no matter how direct its source, is a sacred trust that must be guarded with humility and wisdom, even if its inception stands outside the immediate need for human approval. The memoir provides really essential guidance for those who might feel such a calling.
This is a truly crucial segment of the memoir because it provides essential safeguards and practical wisdom for anyone feeling such a profound pull. The memoir first addresses the danger of pride.
Ah, yes. Really? The big one.
It is. It explains that the feeling of being chosen without a vote, of having a direct line to God's will and purpose, can very easily warp into a sense of superiority or unchecked ambition, if not actively and continuously submitted to God daily through humility and self-reflection.
Has to be grounded.
Exactly. Humility, the memoir argues, becomes the constant counterbalance and spiritual anchor to such a powerful anointing. Then there's the myth of the lone wolf.
Okay.
While a calling may not need a committee's permission to start, the memoir wisely points out that it absolutely seeks wise counsel and the input of a trusted community to endure and to remain on the right path. Solitude for seeking God's voice is distinctly different from isolation that rejects all wisdom and spiritual input.
That's a great distinction. Need community.
Absolutely. Finally, the memoir emphasizes the test of character and fruit. The ultimate, undeniable proof of a calling that bypasses human approval, according to the memoir, is not in the initial feeling or pronouncement, but in the Christ-like character it produces in the individual, and the lasting, positive, tangible fruit it bears in the world. These, the memoir suggests, are the true confirmations that truly matter in the long run, validating the divine source.
That's incredibly insightful guidance from the memoir. The character and the fruit, they become the undeniable witnesses to its divine origin.
Exactly.
And the memoir goes on to explore the internal reality of this calling in the section, The Burning Heart, Solitude, Loneliness, and Fruit. It describes this burning heart as an intensely internal reality, an unshakable conviction that often defies purely logical explanation and doesn't require outside opinions, validation, or votes to exist.
It's just there.
Yeah. It's a deep-seated knowing that something must be done, a divine compulsion that resonates at the core of one's being.
Hmm.
This internal fire is the driving force.
Indeed. And the memoir honestly reflects that this is often a lonely path. Carrying a vision directly from God, a burden that others may not see, understand, or even approve of, can feel deeply isolating.
I can only imagine.
It emphasizes that the call itself does not depend on human approval for its existence or its validity, which inherently means the person carrying it often walks a unique and solitary road, misunderstood by many. Ultimately, the memoir concludes that the evidence of this calling is its impact, its transformative power in the lives of others and in the world.
So the results speak for themselves.
Right. The fruit, not a committee's vote or man's approval, becomes the irrefutable proof of its divine origin and power, demonstrating that God's hand is truly at work.
And this brings us to a beautiful and direct invitation presented in the memoir, your invitation to the adventure.
Yes.
The memoir powerfully reiterates that the echo of the burning bush still resounds today, perhaps not in literal flame, but in the internal conviction of a yielded heart. God's method remains unchanged. He seeks a vessel, not a verdict.
Vessel, not verdict. I like that.
Me too. And his call often requires immediate obedience, not an election or a lengthy deliberation process. The one-man calling, far from being a relic of the past, is presented as a present invitation for you, the listener, to act without waiting for permission from others. It's a compelling call to courage and profound faith right now.
This is where Chaplain David, the author of the memoir, offers another powerful quote that really encapsulates this invitation. He states, "The world is changed not by those who wait for permission, but by those who answer when they are called."
Wow, that's another excellent quote from the CEO.
Isn't it? It's such a profound statement as presented in the memoir because it fundamentally shifts the focus from passive waiting and seeking external validation to active response and obedience. It highlights that the true catalysts for change are those who step out in faith and respond to a divine whisper rather than those who seek human endorsement first. It calls for a different kind of leadership.
That's a powerful challenge directly from the memoir, one that truly resonates. The memoir then asks you, the listener, to consider what it calls the greatest tragedy. To live a life so safe, so constrained by human expectation and the need for approval, that you miss the divine adventure you were truly created for.
Oof, that hits home.
It's a wake-up call, really, suggesting that true safety might lie in courageous obedience. Remember, as the memoir implies, the fire in your bones was never meant just to keep you warm or comfortable in your existing circumstances.
No.
It was meant to set the world ablaze with purpose and impact. So the memoir challenges you. Stop waiting for a vote. Start building a legacy that reflects your divine mandate. Your calling is now. Your single voice may seem quiet in a world of clamor, but the memoir suggests it's the exact frequency God uses to cause an avalanche of change.
Oh.
The world is waiting for the echo of your yes. Don't leave it in silence.
That truly challenges us all to examine our own lives and priorities. And as a final point of reflection, the memoir provides personal reflection questions for you to consider, asking, are you waiting for a vote or permission to step into something God is calling you to do? This is a fundamental, deeply personal question to ponder after diving into these profound insights from the memoir.
And just to quickly highlight, the memoir also gives us some excellent bonus practical takeaways for today. These are actionable steps for anyone wanting to explore or walk in this kind of calling.
Good practical stuff.
Yeah. First, listen for God's voice daily. Don't wait for panels, permissions, votes, or appointments. Cultivate a constant receptivity to divine direction. Second, the memoir emphasizes that fruit is the proof. Transformation in lives and circumstances, not accolades or a board's approval, is what ultimately validates God's calling and presence. And third, treat everything as ministry. The memoir reminds us that kingdom impact doesn't necessarily need a pulpit or an officially voted in position. Every aspect of your life, every talent and opportunity can be an avenue for God's profound work.
This deep dive into Chaplain David's memoir has truly illuminated the profound power of a God-given call that transcends human systems and expectations. Through his own story and reflections, the memoir reminds us that the spark of divine purpose, ignited in a single yielded heart, can ignite the greatest movements and bring about profound, lasting change in the world.
Absolutely. It's a testament to the fact that God still works through individuals who respond to his direct voice.
Yeah.
And we hope you've been inspired by the principles discussed in this memoir to consider your own growth journey of hope, whatever that may look like for you. The memoir champions hope through action, and we invite you to reflect on how these insights might shape your path.
On our site, the CA Jail Outreach website, you'll find powerful ways to share this message, connect with support specifically for families within the jail system.
That's so important.
And even request a chaplain for an incarcerated loved one, we can reach out nationally to provide support. It really is time to reboot growth.
Your journey truly matters to us. Whether you're seeking to launch a nonprofit, maybe you're in need of powerful prayer, or just searching for renewed hope and a fresh start, our dedicated team is prepared to assist. We also extend our support to individuals within the jail system, along with their families and children, offering a helping hand when it's needed most.
To connect with us and explore all our support options, simply visit our website. You'll find it linked right there in the podcast description. Just tap the blue highlighted text. For a deeper dive into Chaplain David's story and our mission, our full memoir is available under the Leadership Memoir tab on the menu bar. Please share our message. We are here to help.
As our boss, Mr. Averett, often says through CA Jail Outreach, more than just a voice, we're a helping hand and a praying heart. Let's connect and build you tomorrow, starting today. I love that.
It's a great summary of the mission. Remember, all the KJV scriptures and the complete memoir we've discussed today are accessible on our website.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next deep dive. And a special thank you to our CEO and founder, David, for taking the time to share his heart and thoughts with the public through this powerful memoir. Until the trumpet blows, wishing you a fantastic day.
Thank you for listening. Always keep your heart moving forward. And remember to follow for more updates. All the information you need is in the description box. As our CEO always says, helping is ordinary. Adding ice makes it extraordinary. And there are leaders, and then there are leaders who served. And among the best leaders are those who always remember to add ice. With that, have a great day.